Hey, everybody. This is FinOps Fridays, our podcast hosted by Aptio and IBM, where we just try to talk FinOps. We try to get industry experts to share their wisdom, advice, experience, and also have a good time. Video stream live on LinkedIn, post to YouTube, and the audio is a little bit longer, and you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information, head over to Aptio.com. But for now, let's dive right into the podcast. Thanks for listening. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of FinOps Fridays. My name is Hunter Willis. I'm your host today. We have Phil Purcell and Ben DeMora. Both of them have been doing FinOps since before FinOps was FinOps. They've both been involved with the FinOps Foundation since just about right around the time of its inception, and even in some cases, part of its inception. And really, really glad to have them here today. We're going to be talking about transparency, accountability, and efficiency when it comes to FinOps, and we want to pick their brains through all their experience, everything they've seen, both from working at several different organizations over the years, as well as from the perspective of helping out different organizations implement FinOps themselves. So, Phil, Ben, why don't we start with Phil? Just introduce yourself, and then Ben, and then we'll dive into the conversation here.
Bill Purcell, currently a senior FinOps consultant over at IBM now. And with that, prior to my IBM days, yeah, like you said, I helped spike up the FinOps group over there at Koch Industries long before FinOps actually had a title to it.
Ben DeMora. I'm now running the FinOps Strategic Advisory. I can never say that word, Strategic Advisory, over at IBM Consulting now for the last couple of months. Before that, I was at Aptio and IBM with Phil working as a senior consultant, and I've also been involved in building FinOps practices at places like Sky and also looking at consulting services and figuring out how we help people to do better in cloud.
And
I just like to tease Ben a little bit about the fact that he came to Aptio and he claimed one of his reasons that he wanted to work on that team was to work with me. Then he goes to IBMC. He leaves me.
So it goes.
Well,
and so, you know, and almost every single conversation that I have, especially with people on the finance side of the house, you know, transparency, accountability, efficiency, but also even from like the FinOps practitioners themselves and engineering will also touch on this when I speak with them about how important it is to have open channels of communication. And also, you know, with these aspects of FinOps and open communication and getting everybody to see the numbers, this aspect of there being an agenda or an axe to grind or trying to lean in on people starts to melt away because everybody starts to realize that they all need to get on the same page. So guys, talk to us a little about, Ben, can we just start with you? Talk to us a little bit about, from a high level, your kind of the way that you see these things and your experience in dealing with different organizations, how important they are and strategies that people take to kind of implement, overcome, and the benefits of them, right?
Yeah, so it's a great question. It's a good starting point. So, I mean, we have to balance the work of doing cloud cost efficiency against all the other drivers from business. We have to think about things like time to market, think about things like new product release, all this other stuff. And really, although we would love for there to be the efficiency being the number one top work driver and the priority at the top, that's not always the case, right? So when it comes to understanding what needs to be done, we need full transparency. And what do we mean by that is understanding not just, okay, I found some money that we could potentially reduce on our spend as a result of changing our usage patterns, but what is the cost of achieving that? And who gets to sign off on that? And what is the opportunity cost of doing that work instead of something else that we would be doing to drive revenue or to drive towards market, right? So it's a balancing act, and that balancing act itself needs to be made with understanding, with that insight piece in place. So that's one of the main sort of strategic considerations is how do we balance the efficiency improvements? And that, by the way, isn't just in terms of like cleaning up the cloud situation, the housekeeping and getting rid of the right sizing, but also optimizing the way that we go to cloud, right? Optimizing our workflows, our cloud landing zones, our standard processes and governance and controls, all this stuff also needs to be tidied up in the light of what we learn from our footprint in cloud, right? So there's a lot of optimization and efficiency work to be done, but there's also, frankly, let's go earn some money and go to market and get our product out the door and make it better than the competitors, all that kind of stuff. So these two things both need doing, and balancing that out needs data to make the right decision.
So with that, so like Ben, what you're talking about is, to kind of summarize, is getting beyond just like focusing on the technical like task of optimizing things and understanding the efficiency of the productization and like kind of the overarching goals for what everybody's working towards, right? And in order to do that, there has to be accountability into the financial side of the house, which is something that we hear, right? Engineers need the to understand why the incentive exists for them to do this thing. And so, Phil, I'm gonna pop it over to you. Have you seen like kind of strategies that organizations have taken from the get-go to operationalize that transparency and communication?
Yeah, absolutely. There's several different things we talk about in that realm. One of them that, I'll steal this this phrase absolutely is putting data in the path. That's one of the big things for me. Whether it's talking about finance, vendors, engineering, whatever direction we're going, the more that you can put the task in front of the person who needs to do the task when they're ready to do the task, that's the most opportune time. So, for example, one of the go-tos for me is when I talk about we talk a lot about optimizations, right-sizing tasks, things like this. So if I'm talking about that specifically, that does go into the engineer realm. How do I best get that in front of an engineer? I put it into their task backlog, whether they're using Azure DevOps, Monday, whatever the tool happens to be. We can create a backlog task, get it back there. That also goes into a culture of accountability, which I'll get into in a second. But that then sets it up so that we've got the right value associated with it. What is the value to the business of taking this action? But then secondarily, we've also got the sense of prioritization in there as well. Oftentimes, businesses will set that based on a threshold of how much that value is. How impactful will this change be? Are there other things that will take priority? Then from that, we can, as we come around in the sprint to choose what tasks are going to move forward, we can look at that and say, oh, it's a low priority, decently high value. Maybe that doesn't make it into this sprint ahead of other tasks we need for development, but next sprint, that's going to be closer to the top of the list that'll come in. So that creates a lot of that, but also that sense of accountability. If that thing just sits and it molds in the backlog, then now we have a task we can go back, see when it was entered, see the communication chain, and understand we put this in front of them. It's not been happening. Why isn't it happening? Let's have a conversation first. And if this persists, we have all of the documentation, the logs to show that there should have been some kind of action taken, and we can hold those people accountable. Same thing. And again, I don't mean to beat up on engineers because I know oftentimes we say getting engineers to take action, engineers, and we just beat up so much on them. But realistically, this is across all practices, finance, vendor relationships, even into sponsorship sometimes. The better we have those logs, the emails, the Slack messages, whatever it is, the more we can introduce that accountability and really make sure things are happening.
Well, in this last episode, I talked with Mike Mack from KubeCost, and one of the things that he pointed out is that, he was coming as a financial director, so he's kind of the FinOps guy from the cloud perspective. And he mentioned that, finance people need to take accountability for understanding what the engineers are doing, because if you don't understand the reason that something is happening, then you can't understand the financial significance of investing in it. And he said, he spoke at length at the fact that in finance people, the more they understand about what's going on from the engineering side, not just at the product level, but also at the resources supporting them and why they need those resources for things like scalability, right? Like being able to have, GPUs for AI workloads and things like that, especially that are coming on now, how much that helps inform the finance side of the house. Ben, can you talk to us about the importance of, the finance side, basically the other way, right? So not just finance being able to talk numbers to engineers, but vice versa, right?
Yeah, so I think regardless of which direction the conversation is going, I mean, to sort of paraphrase a famous quote, context is for kings. Context is king. Context is absolutely critical. I think in a world where we have not got the luxury of 6 to 8 months of deployment delay for kit to hit the floor, where the business sort of, frankly, the dysfunctional and slow interconnectivity of a business can be concealed to some effect by the fact that you have to wait half a year for your kit to arrive. We now have, like, you know, your environment is spun up in the time it takes to drink a cup of coffee. So now all of those inefficiencies, all of those sort of misconnections are exposed, right? Warren Buffett said that it's only when the tide goes out you see who's been swimming naked, right? And it's that's kind of the thing. We're seeing the tide going out. We're seeing the organizational connectivity that isn't happening, and the context, that shared understanding, doesn't mean that everybody in finance now has to go and do AWS solutions architect, right? Like, they don't need to do that. It might be good if they could do the cloud practitioner so they understood that's like a 4-hour piece of effort, right? It might be good if they could go do that so that when somebody says EC2, they know what that means, right? Or RDS and savings plans for RDS, which of course will happen one day, Phil. I promise. I'm sure they will. Maybe reinvent. Maybe we've just seen the news.
but all of, like, the amazing releases that just happened too. Ben.
All of those things that we've definitely just seen. That's right. Me too. RDS savings plans. Who knew? But yeah. So, like, all these things. Okay, they don't need to know how to code them. They don't need to know how they work. They just need to know conceptually, what is this thing that I'm seeing? How is money spent on it? Is it something that we did as a process job and it's finished? Or am I going to see this every weekend or every other day or whatever? What's the pattern like for that? And what should I expect? What does good look like in that as well would be useful, right?
So what are containers and why are all the engineers so concerned with how their lunch is packed?
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Why is everything so much Tupperware? So much. Yeah. But I think it's really important just to have a concept at least. And same thing the other way, right? Like, we don't need to know how to do each other's jobs because we need to be specialists in our field, but we need to be able to share enough context to have a common conversation. And that comes back to the ownership piece, right? When we own something, if we're driving ownership and accountability, which are one and the same thing, really, we need to have insight and agency to make the right decisions from our sphere of influence on that. And we can't do that unless we have a shared context picture, which is useful and accurate and helps us to move forward and work with each other.
You know what occurs to me, Ben, is that in just those couple of back and forths we just had, we basically just summarized everything from the 6 principles behind FinOps, the 22 capabilities across 4 domains, right? The FinOps framework really boiled down into those 3 words, right?
Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, you show me any of the capabilities at any point on the framework, and I defy you to tell me that it doesn't connect to at least one of those concepts of understanding your world, figuring out who owns that bit of it and can make decisions about it, armed with understanding, and that being a way to drive an element of efficiency. Now, that efficiency might not be cost efficiency, it might be process efficiency, it might be confidence in forecasting the future, but it all boils up to those things.
Well, and this is, like, I had a really great conversation. I keep referring to past episodes, but you can go check this one out too with Swapna Samuel, who talked at length about the importance of documentation, right? And having, like, definitions for tags and definitions for why different resources exist and having a catalog of who owns and all that stuff. And I think in the engineering and in the finance world, those kinds of references and resources can be really difficult to maintain, but they also can be life-saving in scenarios where there's a bunch of fires to put out and everybody's trying to figure out stuff, right? Can you guys talk more about other operationalization strategies for, referencing and building that out kind of a thing? And, like, what I mean to say is just other on the ground strategies, like, that you've seen work that customers have implemented in organizations that you've worked at.
One thing that I'll throw in there is, first and foremost, any conversation I ever have with a client always starts with a conversation of, what are you doing today? Because the idea here is not to completely break all of your processes, break your business, and then rebuild it from the ground up. That's not the purpose here. The FinOps framework is a framework, not a blueprint. That's something I will shout from the high heavens day in and day out. Instead, what we want to do is learn how to integrate. And what's the best way to integrate? Workflows. That's the easiest thing, and where I usually start most of my practices. So, yes, our golden state might be to get to this place where we're doing everything in one tool or everything that's, more interconnected in that way. But until we get there, how do we get there? You need data from here? Okay, let's find the right APIs or whatever connectivity we need to bring that into the place where we have it today. Yes, that may be multiple sources in the temporary, but until we get to that later state, workflows to me are one of the biggest operational strategies that people can enforce or employ, I
And
guess I should.
on that as well, Phil, right? I think it's really what some of the things you just said there, which was really good, is like that end state, the goal state. One of the interesting things I've seen by doing quite a lot now of like practice assessments and adoption maturity assessments, whatever you want to call them, right? Looking at the way that people have been able to begin doing these things versus where they want to be. Everybody wants to be at the highest possible score. They all do. They all like, yeah, I want to be a thought leader in every possible space. But maybe that actually isn't any use for that particular business, right? Maybe getting good enough to just get by in certain pieces is fine. So there's going to be as with everything with optimization, there's a diminishing returns point. And part of the magic, I guess, is being able to spot where that diminishing returns point is going to be when you're approaching it. And what to do when you get to that place, right? Do you just put that capability into slow burn maintain, or what is it going to be? And you're going to focus your energies on something else that's going to give you a bigger boost, right? And again, coming back to asking the questions about, do we have a visibility and understanding and insights problem? Do we have an accountability, ownership, and agency problem? Do we have a problem making the changes now that we have those first two things? Because you can have understanding and ownership, but if you're blocked on change, you're still sunk, right? So
You've
being able to figure
absolutely
out
nailed
like
it there.
what's good
And
enough and where do you focus?
one of the things I would bolt on to that is that, like going back to my own experience, right? I always love experiential evidence, right? So for me, coming from Coke, and I'm sure you saw a lot of this at Sky as well, I hear it a million times in customers. Our guidance on our transition into the cloud was simply two words: move fast. That's all it was. And so for us, what that meant was a lot of lift and shift, a lot of waste, a lot of building things exactly as they were on premises. But the reality is, that's not how the cloud works. And it took a lot of hubris to really understand that we should be taking a lot more tempered approach to this. Yes, we want to get things out of the data centers. If we're getting down to the last couple servers there, okay, yeah, let's chuck those into the cloud so we can shut down the data center because there's more value in that, and then we can resize it in the cloud. That makes sense. But if we're looking at a stacked data center and we're just now getting things moved out, okay, let's take a more tempered approach. Let's talk to our architects. Let's understand what's actually necessary. Let's look at our metrics and understand how much of that system were we actually using. Test it as we move into the cloud. Get the right size earlier, and let's do it properly. Let's make it a project, not a task.
Well, and that's, when you're talking about the never-ending migration that is the cloud, right? That's one of the big things is always kind of balancing which workloads are the ones you're going to prioritize to re-architect in the cloud to make them more efficient, and what can be replaced by SaaS, and the feature assessments never end, right? But I think that that's one of the reasons that it's so important to understand the use cases and how the business segments are demanding features from a centralized, infrastructure technology or IT investment area, right? And how you manage that kind of, let's call it chargeback, but it's almost like a feature chargeback can be done in a similar way to your costing strategy, right? Because it can be extremely difficult to understand what applications are being used by what and for whom, especially when you bring like shadow IT into that picture. Now there's this like huge whole other layer of stuff going on, and it just becomes this giant bundle very quickly. But I want to go back to Ben's conversation really quick and the things that he touched on, because at FinOps X, they did a really great job of illustrating the different capabilities in the FinOps framework, right? And we're talking about maturity for each one of those capabilities. And we just went through this very lengthy discussion about how the way kind of maturity for FinOps works is to look at each individual kind of capability, right, and understand, you know, to Ben's point, I think is a great point that Ben made earlier, is that like not every capability is going to be the most important for different organizations. Like a really good illustration of this is for US Federal, like allocation and chargeback is like a huge percentage of their ball game, and everything else can be just kind of, well, you know, like optimization and savings. Well, some agencies, they have budget, they're within their budget. That's what was expected. It's kind of like, well, we can optimize and do more with our money, but that's not the fire that they're trying to put out, right? They're trying to be able to allocate everything so they can get their funding and be able to report that back with transparency to the American taxpayers, right? And so I think that the presentation that they gave at FinOps X, where there was kind of, to use the words of Andrew Midgley, this kind of like analog thought process of each capability, where it's like you're not in the crawl or 100% in the walk phase. You know, there's all these different aspects of each capability where you're kind of in between them, but also understanding. And this is where the kind of, I think as we're having this conversation, right, the idea of which recurring meetings you want to have on which of these topics, right, to have this cross communication and to understand what you're prioritizing and how, is extremely important, both to get your engineers and the technical side informed from the financial side, to get your finance people informed of the use cases and the technology being used to support them, as well as like everybody to working understand where the maturity for each one of their capabilities are, right? And also like which ones need to be prioritized. And the last thing I'll say before I flip it back to Ben to talk about this a little bit more is they change, right? And if you lose a bunch of people that were like doing all your optimization or something like that, your maturity could dump there, and that could be the fire that you need to put out, right? Or like you just go and find out that there were a bunch of cloud resources under an account that you didn't know existed, and now allocation becomes this huge priority again, you know? Things change. And so I would just basically, can you put that in the context, Ben, of this conversation and what we've been talking about as far as like transparency, accountability, efficiency, right? And tying everything in back to the business.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the capabilities within the manage the FinOps practice domain is the FinOps assessment itself. So being able to execute a realistic and importantly targeted insight and understanding of a capability or a set of capabilities in an empirical and sort of dispassionate, objective way, and know then whether or not, first of all, is it where it should be? Because, like, you know, we've talked about the level set that we need to have. Is it where it should be? If not, why not? What's missing? Have we had a people leave, brain drain? Have we got new technical debt due to an M&A purchase of a company, and suddenly we've got a new bunch of cloud resources to work up? All this sort of thing. So what is the critical change point that's required in that capability or that domain or whatever? That is a capability in and of itself, is to do the analysis, right? And that ought to be done. I think ultimately what I've seen being most successful, there was an Italian business that I spoke to as a client last year, and the woman who was leading their FinOps practice, who was an absolute rock star, she took the assessment and said, no, I don't want you to do the assessment for me, teach me. And I taught them, and they built their own version of it, and they've now rolled that out. All of the teams are doing their own analyses of the capabilities that relate to that team. So maybe not all 22, because some of them are not relevant for those teams. They're aware of their current state and what they need to do to grow that further forward, right? And going on beyond that, there's another sort of piece that's maybe maybe a bit of an extension to this, which is not just how good are these individual capabilities, but how well do they fit together, right? If we're looking at a bunch of capabilities, we've got a bag of Lego, right? We've got a bunch of pieces that are in and of themselves are a lump of highly dangerous things to step on if you're a parent. Trust me, it really hurts. It really hurts. But like, yeah, there's a bunch of capabilities kind of in separate pieces, right? They're all great. They're all perfect. They all look great. But how do you plug these together? How do we create the structure that the business needs? Going back to Phil's much earlier comment about workflows, how do we plug those into existing workflows? That, I think, is where it suddenly becomes a lot more relevant and a lot more mature. Because if we can find areas of existing workflows that do almost all of that capability and they've been doing it for years, we can leverage that. It's not something that we're building from a blank sheet of paper. So boosting the maturity of a practice, really the best benefit you can get is to go to the business and find out what you already have that you can plug into these practice pieces and augment from them and with them. So that's kind of the way that I kind of look at it is like, what have I got to start with? Can I boost this?
And I want to hook into one of the things you mentioned about working with your Italian client, Ben. So first of all, before I even do that, I just want to give a little bit of gravity into Ben's accolades, because he is such a humble person that he probably wouldn't mention this himself. But Ben is literally one of the guys who wrote the book on the maturity assessment. So, you know, absolute sense of gravitas from that. But one of the things Ben helped me to connect to as well, one of the things I took away from that, was that the maturity assessment is not meant to be done across the groups like as this entire one behemoth monolithic task, right? Instead, if you actually read through the assessment guide that he wrote, it resources down into target group and target scope. And with that, you can take away exactly what he was talking about with his Italian client. She was looking at an individual group, we'll say the engineering team, just because I picked on them earlier, so this is a little bit lighter topic. So it's looking at a target group, and for this one team, this one engineering team, now let's look at which capabilities we're going to talk to them about. What is important? What is the topic at hand? Let's do those two, maybe three capabilities. Okay, we can get that assessed. Now, let's put that off somewhere. Let's put that into a data set, like whether that's going into a SQL database or, you know, it doesn't even have to be that serious, but just store it somewhere that it is now aggregable data that we can build in with all of our other teams, and we can start assessing it with all of the other capabilities. And now you have that monolithic for our organization. This is the score we've come across for our overall FinOps maturity. But again, to the point, it's not one score. The business is not just in a walk phase, in a run phase. It is for individual capabilities such as workload optimization. Maybe we're doing really well there. We put a lot of focus, so we're in a run state on that. But for another one, such as policy and governance, maybe for that, we're still in a walk or even a crawl stage. So as an organization, it's difficult to say, yeah, we're holistically at a run state. I think it's more fair to say, well, which capability do you want to talk about?
And go ahead. I was going to use a relevant analogy, right? Let's say it's swap capability or maturity for spend, right? I've got 3,000 cloud engineers working for me, and my cloud spend is $105 million a year. And my waste is 25-30%. Okay, great. Who do I talk to? I've got thousands of engineers, hundreds of teams. Who do I talk to? That doesn't help me, right? So to have a we are at walk, our maturity score is 2.3 out of 4. Okay, great. Where are you struggling? Yeah.
Yeah, and that begs the question, at what level of the organization does the maturity get, you know, applied to, right? Is like,
yeah.
So,
well, and
it
kind
of trends to the middle, right?
Yeah, and that lends itself to also another concept out of that assessment guide, which is that when I talk about onboarding workloads. I'm not just talking about onboarding workloads. There are multiple facets to that. It's broken down into several different lenses, as you can consider it. The five lenses we typically use for assessing that are knowledge, adoption, process, metrics, and automation. And man, I'm glad I remembered those on the spot when I needed them. But
I was wondering.
Yeah, and I didn't even have them written down. Like, I thought about doing that just in case it came up, but yeah, anyways. But with that, you can start to look inside of that capability to really understand, okay, well, we know what workload optimization is. We've done the studying, the college side of things is done. But now, are we actually implementing it? You know, are do we have any workflows that help us to actually achieve our goals? Are we tracking ourselves on how well we're performing at this? All of those are such important aspects, and it comes back to exactly what we started by talking about, the transparency, efficiency, and accountability. Those lenses hold true to those exact three things.
So, talk to me. I was going to say, I want to get personal here with you guys for just a minute, okay?
Sorry.
Talk to me about personalities, right? And getting buy-in on transparency and scoring these things, because a lot of organizations, a lot of stakeholders aren't super happy about getting rated on how they're doing, right? And nor are a lot of organizations super excited about transparency. So can you guys talk to me about some strategies around that, what you've seen and what works when you're talking about getting buy-in for these kinds of things?
Ben, if you don't
Yeah.
mind, I'm gonna go first on that one, mate.
Go for it, dude.
He's
I was gonna
excited.
suggest, yeah, you go for it, dude.
You can tell how excited I am for that one.
Yeah, I feel it. Go.
So I've worked with a range of clients from all different backgrounds with all different implementations. Some of them fully in-house, some of them are brand new to FinOps, and some of them are working with consultants to try and leverage a lot more of the expertise that already exists, right? And no shame to any of those positions. I just want to say that off the bat. Like, we all have different businesses and different approaches, absolutely relevant to your situation. But one of the things that I will say is personalities can absolutely get in the way. Oftentimes, when I'm working with either somebody who is brand new to FinOps, but their organization is a very well-known, very mature organization, they feel like they have to put the needle at least a walk or a run stage because that's what's expected of them. Another place that I see this a lot of times is when we have consultants that come in, and so it's kind of a third party talking through the company to a consultant. Then now that consultant doesn't want to look bad because they want to make sure they get their renewal on their side. So they try to push their maturity to the edge when, in actuality, when you start looking at it, if they have metrics, metrics tell the truth. Metrics will open up that curtain, and you see everything behind the kimono there. Just to use like five different idioms in one sentence. But then the other side of it as well, like as we get beyond the metrics, let's start having the conversation. As we have the conversation, we can quickly see behind a lot of what is just being masked on the surface. So I think that personalities absolutely can get in the way. FinOps, first and foremost, begins with humility.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think realism and pragmatism are really important things to bring with you when you start doing this, because I think fake it till you make it is the wrong approach here. Yeah, I also say that I think calling it an assessment is a terrible idea, says the guy who wrote the playbook. calling it an assessment is an absolutely terrible idea because immediately. Right. I mean, Hunter, if I'm someone, I'm gonna assess you over the next 2 weeks in
Great.
detail, right? How are
Looking
you gonna
forward to
feel
it.
about that? Right? It's just like, wow, man, I'm under the microscope now. This is gonna be fun. It's the wrong vibe. It's the wrong vibe, right? What are we looking for here?
The
What are we
term
trying to
survey, Ben, what do you use?
survey or and just, with checkpoint, right? Like, how are things going? Temperature
Benchmarking.
check. Benchmark, health check, whatever, right? How are things going, right? Let's get some evidence, let's get some data together to figure out where we can make it better. That's really the goal. It's not a hammer to hold over people. It's not something that's going to be like, well, if you score lower than a two, you're terrible and you should feel terrible. It's like a right. Well, okay. Well, we've actually uncovered that you do these things super, super well, really strong here. This is an area that's not really been explored all that much. And if we dial this one up, it opens the door to a whole bunch of other cool stuff that you can then start to leverage now that you've got that core competency in that particular domain, for example, that gives you the ability to go further, right? If you've got very poor cost allocation, it's very difficult to do forecasting. In fact, it's very difficult to do anything, right? But for example, that could be an unlocking capability that opens the door to a bunch of other cool stuff. So it isn't a question of we're gonna test you and you might fail. It's more of a question of like, well, let's do a bit of self-reflection, find some areas where we could do better at, right? You know, if you're lifting in the gym and you're working on one set of muscles, and those muscles are particularly powerful, but you're not managing your clean and snatch very well because your quads are weaker. Work on those and suddenly your clean and snatch is better, right? So it's the same thing.
Well, and it's kind of a sign of the times that we're in now, especially in this period of time moving forward. One aspect of what we're talking about for getting this buy-in and getting people to understand that, you know, like a benchmark is okay, and we're not trying to like, you know, bring down the negative on folks, is that, you know, 5 years ago when money was practically free to get financing for, and you know, those things were flying off the shelf all over the place, and SaaS was still kind of, I don't want to say new, but at the enterprise level and being widely adopted, really just kind of crossing the benchmark of being popularly accepted. You know, cost was not a concern. There was still so much profitability that nobody had to worry about this to a great degree. You know, there was some desire to be efficient and not have duplication and stuff, but like, you know, why am I gonna, it's like gas and energy in the 70s, you know, before the gas crisis and fuel became, you know, much more expensive when we learned more widely about the environmental effects of things. You know, they're tearing down high rises right now because it's cheaper to destroy it and rebuild it than it is to like update the energy infrastructure in high rises for things that were built back then. So, you know, just reminding people of that, it's like, hey, you know, that seems like a call out to me is like, look, it's not that you weren't like, this wasn't even a focus. It wasn't even on the radar until exactly, this period of time for a lot of organizations. And still now for some, it's like they want to do this, but there's no, you know, there's not really a fire to put out or anything with it. It's just like, look, we want to do more with less, and it's a priority.
Yeah, well, and as we're talking about like the ways that people might reflect on benchmarks, right? This brings to mind one of my other favorite stories to tell in the cloud is when I first started at Apptio, I was a technical account manager, and I did a lot of our onboardings, and I was working with a company who I still won't mention their name, never have, but there's more to why I bring that up in just a moment. With this organization, while we were onboarding, we happened to be in the topic of anomaly detection, and it was such a perfect moment that we were looking at that exact thing, because what we wound up finding was that they had just had, within the last day, an over $300,000 anomaly come from Lambda. AWS Lambda, or I'm sorry, it wasn't AWS Lambda. It was from GCP BigQuery. That's what it was, GCP BigQuery. And this is on a system that normally they expected like hundreds of dollars a day. Now it's hundreds of thousands. So great moment for them to ask me, so is that a mistake, or do I need to go have a conversation? Went to go have a conversation. Wound up finding out, yes, it was legitimate. Yes, there was an issue that happened. Wound up to being a coding issue that instead of pulling a small subset of data, it was pulling the whole table, was repeating a whole bunch of, like a whole cascade of issues. Anyways, coming out of that, what wound up happening was, yes, they had the initial conversation, found out what happened. They were able to stop that query, you know, stop that workflow from proceeding so that they stopped the bleed. They did go back to Google, and in this one situation, because they've been a long time client and everything was very happy, Google was able to come in and say, hey, we're gonna do right by you guys. We're gonna give you a one time. We're not doing this again, but one time we'll give you a credit for that issue, which that was massive unto itself. But also, I was told that they brought Google on site to work with that team to understand how it happened, what went wrong, how to build guardrails from having it happen again, all of these things. Well, the person who injected that code, it turns out that they were a consultant for this organization. So you can imagine all the thoughts going on in the back of their head, man. I personally would have been like, okay, I'm looking on the market again. Where's my next role? Because I'm done here. But following this story, the couple of years had passed since that moment, and I was actually at TBMC delivering a FinOps practitioner course and telling that exact story when somebody in the audience raises their hand, and I'm like, turns out that person raising their hand stands up and says, I'm from that company. This was our story. I was involved in like the back end of a lot of what was happening here. And would you like to know what happened next? We didn't fire that guy. In fact, we hired him as a full-time employee. We brought him on and we've been using him as a proper use case that he's now going around the organization, teaching people those guardrails, using his experience to leverage that. And so it was just about the most positive outcome that I could ever see from something that, honestly, to me, would have been one of the most horrific stories in the cloud.
Yeah, that is one of the biggest like incentives for a shift left story that I've ever heard in my life. Right.
Yeah, that's
Bringing
awesome.
FinOps into
Yeah.
that anyway, so Ben, let me get in, guys. We're kind of coming up on time here a little bit. I want to ask as kind of a conclusion here, top piece of advice for operationalizing this kind of transparency, accountability to bring in efficiency for organizations.
Simplify. You have to simplify. Simplify and understand what you have, what you can do, right? You are at risk of drowning in information, not just spent cloud spend information, organizational information, process information. Boil it down, right? Look at the bare minimum of what you can do, right? What is the simplest picture you can paint? And just very carefully add context with that until you understand what it is that you can achieve with that piece, right? Now, whether that is building a strategy for committing to purchase commitments, right? Savings plans, that kind of thing. It's possible to just, eyes closed, point and stab, go for it, and hope for the best. Maybe don't do that, right? But it's also very, very possible to over egg that omelet. And spend and just lose months in analysis paralysis and just go deep into making an agonizing decision and building a nuanced strategy. The right path is a simpler one, right? So figure out, don't get sucked into all the data. If you can, find a solution that simplifies that data for you, not just the spend data, because we all know that's huge, right? But also the understand your processes. Do a little bit of maybe lean process thinking and think about whether those existing processes can be simplified and improved as well. But the shorter the path that you can create and the easier the road that you can give people, the more likely they will follow it, the more likely they will understand it, and the happier everybody will be. If you wind up, I mean, it is a complex set of disciplines. We keep talking about this. There used to be 18 capabilities, is now 22. It incorporates things like sustainability, which is an entire massive, hornet's nest all by itself of horrible data that's difficult to get hold of and trust. There's
A
so much
smog of
there.
information, if you will.
Just yes, a veritable the smoke of war, if you like. It's crazy. So simplify, make it simple, and go from there.
Bill, same question to you. What's the best piece of advice you think as an approach to doing this and for FinOps practice?
For me, the biggest thing for me is if you are the FinOps lead, you are the center point of all of this. Don't be the, and I'm gonna say, I don't know copyright considerations around this, and I don't want you to get taken down, so I'm gonna use generic terms. Don't be the generic flying superhero, be the mild-mannered news reporter, right? And the reason I say that is you can try to take all the tasks on your back and try to resolve everything in the world, but at the end of the day, you're just going to be exhausted and probably divorced, is what I'm going to say. But if you are the communicator, if you know the right people to talk to and you leverage the right people at the right time, what's going to happen is now you're going to be able to scale out. You're going to be able to get everything resolved because you're not feeling overwhelmed. They're not feeling overwhelmed. Everybody understands what's in front of them. And yeah, communication is key.
That's great. And I think kind of a capstone on all of that too, to build on everything that y'all just talked about, is just kind of trust and relationships, right? The cups of coffee and the conversations and the regular kind of the right kinds of regular meetings to communicate well at the right intervals, instead of don't make everybody show up to that weekly meeting that, nothing really gets done at, but picking the right people to kind of meet at the right intervals to set priorities and have those communications. I think that this was a really great, well-rounded conversation, guys. I really appreciate everything that you've touched on today. I think we got in the thick of it and really got out some meat and potatoes. So really, really appreciate it, Phil. Ben, once again, thanks for your time too. Phil, Ben, for both of you, any last words to sign off here?
It was a
I'm going to
privilege. Thanks for
steal
having us.
a great quote here. If I've seen further than others, it's only by standing on the shoulders of giants.
Ben?
Very, very prescient thing that I keep with me in my FinOps life.
Yeah, that's a good quote. I don't have any good quotes. This was great fun. I think it's really important that we never forget the human element of this, right? Remember that this is a change journey, but it's not a technology, yes, it's a technology change journey. It's a business change journey, but it's a personal change journey. People's own jobs, their ability to get a good day's work done is changing when this is being brought in place. And that change needs to be supported and understood and be compassionate towards. So let's remember that this is a human change journey that we're doing.
All right, great. Thanks again, guys. Really appreciate it. Everybody, thanks for tuning in to this episode of FinOps Fridays. We'll see you next time. Hey, everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of FinOps Fridays. If you have any FinOps questions or questions about the podcast, reach out to us at finopsfridays@aptio.com. You can also find more information at the website there as well. We're also really active on social media, so hope that you like, subscribe to our content, and if you have any questions, you can also comment there. Hope to see you next time. Hope you have a good one until then.